How do we determine paternity in Jewish law? So why is this relevant? Why does it make a difference who, how you determine paternity? So there's a lot of different reasons why it's relevant. So one is kibud avim, pidyon haben, nationality. Is the child Jewish? Is the child a mamzer? Who do you sit shiva for? Is the father? Huh?
Yerusha.
Exactly. Is the father mekayim mitzvah pru revu? And the most important one for Hallmark is who do you send a card to on Father's Day?
That should be the top of the list.
Very good.
Those are more.
Yes.
Okay.
So, as in any good lecture in medical school or discussion in medical school, I like to frame my discussion with cases. So, the first two cases at the top there. So, the first one is we chose Isaac and Rebecca, if you can figure out why. And they were having trouble conceiving. And so, they went through the workup. And they found that they had low sperm. They found that there was oligozoospermia, or low sperm count. And so the doctor suggested AIH, or artificial insemination, using the husband. Second case is the same two people, but their sperm analysis came back a little bit different. Uh-huh. Their sperm analysis came back slightly different, and this time Isaac was found to be azoospermic, so he had absolutely no sperm. And this time the physician suggested using artificial insemination through a donor. So using these two cases, I'd like to now frame the discussion. So in the literature, including the secular literature, there's three possible, and we have the expert here, but there's three real possible definitions of paternity. He's taking family law. There's three possible definitions of paternity. There's the genetic father, which is defined as the one who contributes the genetic material. There's the biological father, which is defined as the father with whom the sexual act occurs. So how would they be separate? Let's say you have a testicular transplant. So a testicular transplant, the technical genetics, if you would look at it, would be of the person that it came from.
Is that real?
They're
working on it. Yeah, no, it's in the journals of anticipatory medical health.
That'd be like a brain transplant.
Except it
for some
be.
Guys, yeah.
And then there's the legal father. So in American legal law, they use a lot of different values to decide what a father is. Some of it is the best interest of the child, common law, estoppel, which essentially means that since you haven't litigated up until now, you're presumed to be the father.
What was that word?
Adoption.
Wait,
estoppel.
Estoppel?
E-S-T-O-P-P.
No, that's not estoppel. Estoppel is where the father has gone out of his way to say that to keep the biological father out of the child's life.
Right.
And he's
right.
The adopted father.
It's the presumed father. Well, there's two different ways to understand it. But fine. There's two different ways to understand how estoppel works. One is adoption,
okay.
And the other one is presumed consent, but by virtue of the fact that he signs consent on the sperm donation. So we'll get into that after this year. And so throughout this year, hopefully, we'll see what halacha views as the father. So let's begin with artificial insemination of the husband. So history, when is the earliest, anyone know when the earliest human artificial insemination occurred?
Or you mean in terms of like?
Recorded medical. When did they start
Egypt.
Doing it?
Totally Egypt.
The mikveh babies.
So it was in the 1700s. So
really,
the
first,
wasn't Jesus in
1785? Hold on. 1785 is the medically recorded by a doctor named Dr. John Hunter. And his patient had hypospadias, and he suggested, why don't you collect the semen and use a sperm to use a syringe to inject the sperm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
They were doing that in the 1200s with animals.
Right, but that's why I said humans.
Right.
So the first question that we really have is one Mekayim in the mitzvah of Pru Revu using this method? This artificial insemination where you're separating the act and the actual genetic material, are you Mekayim in the mitzvah of Pru Revu? So with this, we begin with the Chalkos Mechokek. And he's Mesupik whether. He says, Yesh Estapik, Ishish Nesabik Ba'ambatya, and we'll get to that. In Kayim Ma'av Pru Revu. So he's not sure. The Chalkos Mechokek, the Beis Shmuel in Eben Ezer. So he quotes the Chalkos Mechokek, and he says, if you look on the underlined part, that he feels b'no l'chol davar. He feels that you are considered, you are mekayim the mitzvah peruv.
Oh yeah, he had these sources, right? Right, Flam actually had these sources.
I don't know what sources he had, actually.
Okay.
He says b'no l'chol davar. And the Chalkos Mechokek refers to the case of Ben Sira. So what's the case of Ben Sira? So it actually begins first in the Gemara in Chagiga. In Gemara in Chagiga, there's a discussion about whether a Bas Kohen who became pregnant, who says she is still a Basula, what her status is. And there's a discussion, how could this possibly be? He was able to boil her without actually removing her virginity. or her hymen, actually, really. And the Gemara ends up saying no. That what we think what actually happened is she became pregnant in a bathhouse. And we know sperm can live outside the body for at least a couple hours. So it is technically possible that you can, that sperm somehow it would have to get inside the woman. That's a different discussion.
And
how exactly
that? Would the egg have to have been, you know?
She would have to have. She would have, in the last orgasm. In the last 18 to 24 hours. No.
Oh, ovulation. Right. Okay.
Ovulation
fine.
Usually
so, like,
occurs.
Hours. Okay, fine. Like
without orgasm.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But
I've actually been wondering about that for the longest time.
So ovulation occurs on its own. We can go through the hormones, how that works after this year, since we have a lot to come. So the Midrash, using this Gemara, is discussing the concept of someone who was born, became impregnated in the bathhouse. And there's two Midrashim, and the one I quoted here was just shorter, that's why. But basically, talking about Ben Sira. Who was Ben Sira? So essentially, the Midrash says that Ben Sira was Yirmiyahu's son. How was Ben Sira born? So Yirmiyahu had left over some semen in the bathhouse. His daughter came afterwards and became impregnated. And they called him Ben Zerah. When he grew up and realized why he was being called Ben Zerah, he was very embarrassed, as the Midrash says. He was, and he so therefore they called him Ben Sira, which was the gematria of Yirmiyahu. So what we see from here is really the beginning that, and nevertheless, he was considered Yirmiyahu's son. So now, lahalacha, Rabbeinu Peretz, the Taz quotes Rabbeinu Peretz, and that's this right here on the right here. And if you skip down. He says hello Ben Sira. If you skip all the way down to 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from the bottom, he says Ben Sira kasher haya. Ben Sira was considered a kasher, and he was considered his beno l'chol davar, and therefore he paskins and he says that the Rabbeinu Peretz, based on this measure, says that their paternity is determined based on the father. Whoever gives the genetic material, that is the person who is considered the father.
Honestly, we don't want halacha from Midrash.
Very good. We'll get to that in a second. That's a very good point. And that will be a discussion. Now, usually, just in short, we don't normally, but if we don't have any other place to turn to, that is a place we might turn to try to find an idea of how to understand.
I love this whole anecdotal stuff. Which Midrash is this?
I have it over here. I have to. I'll get back to you.
Okay, fine. Sorry.
There's two Midrashim. One is like the Aleph Beis Ben Sira or something like that. Okay, so I think it's the Otzer Midrashim or something like that. So we'll get back to this Rabbeinu Peretz also. But the first thing is, so it's brought down Lahalacha in the Tash Beitz. He says that the sperm donor is the father of the resultant child. And the modern day poskim also hold this way. Lahalacha, Rav Avadi Yosef says he's the child. Rabbi Weiss, the Mechas Yitzchak, Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, Rav Nevinsal, they all poskim that the sperm donor is the father. And all of the above, according to Rabbi Brander, are also poskim that they're Mekayim Puruvu. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, when I read through his sheet, article in the first issue of Noam, so I was unsure what his ultimate psak was, because he didn't actually repeat it in his sequel. Tit Eliezer, he does not feel that you're Mekayim Puruvu through artificial insemination, and that's one of the reasons why he doesn't allow IVF. He doesn't believe in IVF. Rav Mordechai Willig, because I always like to usually quote one of the poskim from YU, he feels that it's Benola Kol Damar, and you are Mekayim Mitzvah Puruvu. So what we have here is, so this was our first case. So basically,
AIH, right?
This is AIH, yes. So with artificial insemination using the husband's sperm, we see that most poskim would say that the husband most poskim say that the child is, the resulting child is related to the father, and that the husband is Mekayim the Mitzvah Puruvu. What about our second case? So our second case was the case that Isaac was azoospermic. He had absolutely no sperm, and the doctors there were suggesting that he undergo, that he get a donation. So what are the couple's options regarding AID, artificial insemination from a donor?
He really has nothing. Does he have anything to do with the process?
Huh?
Does he have anything to do with the process?
No. In this case, he would not have anything to do with the process. There was a time in which they were doing mixture. So they would mix the azoospermic semen with the sperm of another man, which
How does that really accomplish anything?
So the idea was it assuaged the man so that he thought it was possible that maybe the child, resultant child was
his. This is
someone
who doesn't understand.
You never know.
Physiology.
Right. Essentially, it's in fact, actually, there was a recent child someone I was talking to said that they asked him whether this was allowed. Like someone actually wanted to do this. Like a physician actually wanted to do this. Don't understand why. I'm not sure how that would even be allowed ethically. So what are the two possibilities?
For a testicular transplant, would this be considered AID then?
So we'll get to that. That's a whole separate shear that I'll maybe get at some point. So the two possible options are using a Jewish sperm donor and a non-Jewish sperm donor. So the questions that we need to figure out is, does AID, using a sperm donor, does that create a status of mamzerus? And then, since the mother is not married to the donor, coupled to that is the action of AID, of insemination with someone else, with another man's sperm, is that an action of adultery? And does it matter, does it make a difference that the sperm was placed in the woman's reproductive tract without the mysebia? Does the fact that there was not a mysebia make a difference in this case? So we'll start here with the Gemara in Chagiga. So going back to the Gemara in Chagiga that we saw, so the Gemara there was talking about what is the status of this Bas Kohen. Ultimately, the Gemara says that the Bas Kohen's okay, that we don't consider the fact that she became impregnated with another man's sperm in act of intimacy. Why? Because there was no, and Rabbeinu Peretz says, why? Because there was no act of Bia. There was no Maisa Bia.
Huh? It's not a Bas Kohen, it's talking about a Basula for a Kohen Gadol.
Right, sorry, Basula for a Kohen Gadol. Meaning, is the Basula still able to marry the Kohen Gadol? And the answer is yes. At the end of the day, the fact that she was pregnant, the fact that insemination occurred with another man's sperm, since there was no Maisa Bia, that's not a problem. And if you look in Rabbeinu Peretz, we'll read it because I like it a lot. So what does he say here? What's he talking about? He's discussing a woman lying on the sheets of her husband during a Yemei Nida. And he says that the woman, going 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down, Isha Nida Yechola Lishko Vasidine Bala Vinizheres Misidinim Sheshachav Aleim Isha Acher, but she should be careful Pentis Aber Mishichva Zereshal Acher. V'amai? He asks why. We shouldn't be worried about it. Right? Is that what the problem is? He says no. V'heishiv kevan de'ein kan bias iser. Since there's no ma'ase bia, havlad kasher lagamri. The vlad is completely kasher. He's not a benida. And this is where we get into the AID aspect. Afilu tis aber mishichva zera shel acher. Even if she becomes impregnated with the shichva zera, with the zera of another. Ki halo ben sira kasher haya, just like ben sira's kasher. So he says, and that wouldn't be a problem. What would be the problem? Ela dimishchva zera shel acher kapdinan av chanav gzeira shema yisa achos me'avin. What are we really concerned about? Why do we say don't lie on the sheets of another man? It's not because we're worried that maybe she's gonna get pregnant from the other person and that's adultery or znus, so the child's me and mom's. No, the main issue is because we're worried shema yisa basachos. Maybe he's gonna marry his sister, and that's the gzeira, and that's the reason why we did that.
Maybe avchana is just the waiting period between acts, just to determine paternity. Just so you know. You wait 3 months between acts. If somebody gets divorced or widowed,
right, like,
she has to wait at least 3 months till she can remarry, because we want to make sure we know whose child is.
So, according to Rabbeinu Peretz, we see that...
Just to clarify, we're concerned that the child will end up marrying his sister, because
yes.
He won't know...
Shema Yisa Basachoso is that he won't know that he's...
Who his father was, and then
he might end up marrying his sister. So according to Rabbeinu Peretz, as long as there's no Maisa Bia, the child is not a mamzer and it's kosher.
Do we make a distinction that the sperm donor shouldn't be of in direct family relation source?
I have not seen that. I would imagine from a genetic standpoint, we would want that.
But like,
let's say down south.
We're saying it's like not Bia, so then could you say that we could bypass the serum of Gilaros?
So I would say that there are, because since Kiddushin is not, I think Shlomo Zalman talks about people who Kiddushin is not able to be Tofes Aleihem, so then that situation might create a Suffolk Mamzer. So maybe that's what you're referring to. That a situation where the two individuals who are donating the genetics to create this child, the Kiddushin is not able to be Tofes Aleihem, so I guess a brother and a sister. But I didn't see anyone talking specifically about that. That's a good question.
Not posthumously.
So posthumous is a whole other discussion, which I didn't get into because we only have a half hour to discuss it.
That's
so, but we can testicular biopsy, posthumous. So that gets into the Gemara in Megillah. When exactly does a father become a father? And it seems that it becomes a confirmed conception in Eilech. Anyways, so let's talk about the modern day postgame, and this is where we're going to start seeing a little differentiation between what Rabbi Flam said and what the postgame say. What the actual words of the poskim are. So Rabbi Flam said, he said it's usher to ever use a sperm donor. He says it's always usher, and the reason why he said it is because you have a suffix mamzer, and he says also that was the way he presented sperm donation.
Because he's possibly that it'd still be a, that even without the
it's saying it's a suffix.
So he's saying it's a suffix mamzer.
Because of the whole bia question. He's in doubt of whether you require bia in order for it to be a mamzer. That's what he's saying.
Yes, and we'll get into, well, it, see, the thing is that only, you know what, let's see what the post can say, and then we'll see where Rafam's getting, what he's getting from. So the first major person to look at is really Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe has many tshuvos on this. In fact, I have an entire packet here of tshuvos that relate to it. The tshuvos that I chose are the ones that directly relate to the permissibility of it. So there's three tshuvos that directly relate to, is it permissible to do this? The first tshuva is in, I have here for you. So we'll read it briefly. Do we have time? You got to see this outside. It's important. So Ava mikeven she'atam afur Hashem shehu midin gzera Hashem yisa v'asachosu me'aviv yesh lahatir b'zera shal nachri she'keven she'avlad yeh Yisrael keven she'imo Yisraelis ein lachosh l'klum de'ein lo yichus la'ava nachri afim haya derech bia, even if it was to a derech bia. There's no yichus to the nachri. Ruchshinu derech bia elabam batya kol shekein ulechein yesh lahatir b'shas adchak gadol. He says b'shas adchak gadol umitzdar mode. When there's shas adchak and the patient is really suffering, bashkakutam right, when they're having really hard time to have children, he would say, he says that would be that using a nachri is not a problem. And he says that specifically using the zera of a nachri, and he also says it needs to be brishos habal. Now, when he came out with this psak, well, first of all, as you can imagine, any couple that is at the point of using AID means they are at shas adchak and they are in mitzdar mode. But so when he came out with this psak,
that's debatable. In mitzdar mode, which don't come levlad. I mean, I don't know. It depends if people want a child because everyone has children or because they actually really, really want a child. I don't know if that's
simple. Either way, it's the same. Isn't it the same thing in the end?
No, that's my point. No, it's about an emotional state. I don't think necessarily everybody's, you know, desperate to have a child.
And that's people that are weighing AID, I think, are desperate to have a child. That's why they're not adopting.
I'm not sure if that's the same thing.
Okay. Well, we'll get to it.
He doesn't say b'shas adchak. He says, you know, mstarim be'od v'shtel kum levad. He's requiring a certain emotional state. That's not right. B'shas adchak.
Yeah. So after this came out, the Divrei Yoel, which I think is the Satmar Rabbi by Teitelbaum, wrote a scathing rebuke. I don't know if it's a rebuke, but rebuttal. And fire, like a fire and brim. Like, and he basically, you know, attacks Rav Moshe and says that by writing this tshuva, you are destroying the yichus and the taharis of Klal Yisrael by allowing, you know, people to do this. So Rav Moshe has a rebuttal tshuva, which I didn't quote here, and he goes through and he says, "I'm very sorry, but this is the halacha. You know, I know that's what you're accusing me." He actually goes on a whole rant and says, "You know, you're getting Christian ideology in there." But the point is, what he says is, listen, this is the halacha. The halacha is the halacha. What do you want from me? This is how I learned this again. This is what the halacha paskins. Therefore, it's not a pirza in the Taharas of Klai Yisrael. Later on, in Chelek Dalid, he changed his tune a little bit. However, you have to read very carefully to see what his change of tune is. V'chein mashak asavti says that which I've written before. Kulam emes ubar ledina lo shayech leisrachit mehem. I'm perfectly good with it. I have absolutely no problem with the Zrika Zerah Shanachim. Avalamaisa, lo harisi lasos kein mitam, He says, well, lamaisa, maybe you shouldn't do it. Mitam shel inyan kiyum mitzvos puravu labala in zaklum. He's not mikayim the mitzvah puravu, which is obvious.
The question is, what exactly are you accomplishing in terms of mitzvos, right? That's interesting, right?
Va'isha inim chayavis, v'shayach shiyatza mizeh kina gedola labala. He says, and you might create this jealousy.
Right.
So he says, l'chin ein ze etza tova. Ein ze etza tova. So he doesn't say it's us, or he doesn't say you should. He says, that might not be the best idea. You know, even though, up until now, he's been very on top of saying, no, it's okay, it's okay. Now, many poskim that I spoke with felt that Rav Moshe always held that it was mutter, but because of intense political pressure, he felt the necessity to soften his language a little bit in this. But that's not, but he really felt that it's not a problem. Now, the Divrei Yoel, he held the child would be a mamzer. He's one of the only people who holds a child mamzer, and he learns it from...
Right, so mamzer.
He says mamzer.
From Menachri?
From yes, I think from Menachri.
Not so sure how there's no reason this
should
be
an example by Menachri. He says it's usser, because then... Right, he says the reason why is because there's an issue with... which we'll talk about it later, but basically he said that the issue was that one of the major issues is that society, the reason why adultery is usher is society won't know who the father is.
Right.
So if he says this is a situation where society won't know who the father is, and there are a lot of issues with using commentary, Rishonim's commentary on the Chumash as a psak halacha, and he admits to that, but he says at least he feels you should be able to use it l'chumra, but just not l'kula. That was the Divrei Yoel. Anyways, so Rav Shlomo Zalman Rohrbach, what did he hold? So he has, like I said, he has a long article in which he... we got to go a little faster. Fine. So regarding Mamzeres, what did he feel? So he says he felt you can't use the Midrash Lahalacha. And he says he doesn't... So therefore he doesn't hold like Rabbeinu Peretz. He actually has a different way he understands it, Tosfos that he bases it on. But nevertheless, he holds that AID with a Jew, right? So a Jewish donor, he says that's Aser. And he said that situation would create a suffix mamzeres. However, if it happened, the woman would not be usher to her husband, and it wouldn't. It's not a maises nus.
But the maises, the kid is a suffix mamzer.
If it's a Jew,
right? That's a big deal, though.
If it's a guy,
yeah.
Not usher to do. The chatchila, he said you shouldn't do. But if it's done, the vlad's kosher. There's no chshash bechlal of it being a mamzer, and the vlad would be a jula kol daver. Rabbi Dr. Steinberg, who writes, he wrote an article about the medical psukim of Rav Shlomo Zalman Rohrbach, and I quoted him: if no other method is available to help the couple have a children, it is permissible to use the sperm from a non-Jewish donor.
It's not that different from emotion.
It's not that different from emotion.
Right. Similar to adoption.
Yes, I guess. We see very well, no, except here you wouldn't require conversion because it was born to a Jewish mother. So we see very clearly that using a non-Jewish donor would be permitted, and there's no safek mamzer if you're using a guy. Both according to Shlomo Zalman Rohrbach and according to Moshe Feinstein, no safek mamzer is with the using non-Jewish sperm. So that's where the disagreement of Rabbi Flam is. Rabbi Flam was saying, oh, it's safek mamzer. That's by use of a Jew. That's not by use of a guy. Now, you could say it's not always so easy to know necessarily who whether it's a Jew or a guy. Sometimes, you know, how you can tell. But, all right, so let me just, we'll just finish up. So the Tzitz Eliezer, he is kind of a little bit in between the Divrei Yoel and the other two tshuvas, and he feels that the act of insemination is an act of adultery. So whoever does the insemination, so some people have said with that therefore the doctor would actually be the adulterer in this case. But anyways.
Who says this?
Sicily, yes. Some people read that into what he was saying. Now,
Rav
Willig,
make the baby an altar?
That I don't know, because I didn't look at it. I didn't see Sicily Ezra inside. So let me just finish with Rav Willig. So I spoke with Rav Willig today. I always like to talk to him before I give a shir. So I asked him what are his positions. So he said with AIH, right, obviously the Vlad is kosher, you film the Kayim is a Peruvu. How about AID with a Jew? He says the child's not a mamzer. It's not the best thing to do, but he didn't feel it was aser. AID with a guy, Vlad is kosher, no mamzeris, no require of geris. And so I asked him, is this what's done? Is this done? And he said, yes. This is commonplace in current practice, that people do use AID, and it's not a problem. Yes. He said, and I asked him specifically about Rav Moshe's Lashon, he said that he felt that the B'dieved that the Poskim discuss is a situation where the husband cannot conceive. He says, that's what B'dieved is. So what's L'chadchila? So L'chadchila is, I want the genetics of that person. I like their hair color, I like their eye color, I like whatever aspect about them, so I want this. He says, that's L'chadchila. But no one wants to do AID L'chadchila. That's only time you're doing AID is only B'shas L'chadchila. So in summary, basically what we've seen is that AIH, most told the resultant child's benola called davar. It's machlokus whether the father's mekayim puruvu. If you say no, you might not allow IVF.
Wait a second, so that's interesting then. But then potentially it could be also because if a doctor, it's an adultery thing,
This is AIH though.
But I'm saying, still.
Oh, according to
Tzitzel.
That's why Tzitzel Yezer, I don't think, allows IVF.
Okay.
And AID, if he's Jewish, is a machlokus. Some say he's a mamzer, some say he's a suffolk mamzer, some say he's not a mamzer at all. Non-Jewish, all would say he's not a mamzer, although I'm not sure what the Divri all says, because I didn't see him inside. Vlad's kosher and Jewish. Some say it's best not to do this l'chadchila, but b'dieved it's okay. And some say AID is only done b'dieved, because that's the only time situation. So what it seems might be one of the best things to do is to use a donor whose father is Jewish. Because this way you're keeping the Jewish genetic lineage without and not having any problems of mamzerus.